Welcome to the Co-ops and Campuses podcast series, which is being recorded on the unceded and ancestral territory of the Musqueam people. It doesn't take much to realize things aren't going too well for the planet these days. What is clear is that climate change and growing inequity is not going to be fixed by more disaster capitalism. In this series, we're going to learn from students, staff, faculty, and activists who are actively responding to the crisis we face through building cooperatives on campuses, and in some cases, in building an actual cooperative university. I'm Michelle Stack, and I'll be your host. Today, I'm very happy to welcome Michelle Cooper Iverson. Michelle is the Chief Operating Officer for the Cooperative Housing Federation of BC. She's also on the board of the BC Cooperative Association and is currently pursuing a Master's of Management Cooperatives and Credit Unions at St. Mary's University. Michelle, I'm so grateful that you found time in your very, very busy schedule to talk with me.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be here.
So maybe we can just get started with a bit about how you got involved in co-ops.
Well, I got involved in co-ops mostly by working for a cooperative. So I work for the Cooperative Housing Federation of BC, and I've been there for just under 14 years, coming up on my 14th anniversary. And that's really how I got into the sector. But as I started learning more about cooperatives, whether it's housing cooperatives or different industries, different sectors, it's really quite a passion for me. And then I just kept rolling, snowballing from there, going right up to graduate work in cooperatives. So I'm very excited about that.
Oh, that's commitment to be working in the cooperative sector and going to school.
Right.
So could you talk a bit about the history and current state of co-ops in BC?
For sure. Like, the BC co-op sector is quite diverse, from farmers to counselors to natural foods to obviously the financial co-ops. But the largest number of co-ops in BC are the housing co-ops. There's just under 15,000 co-op homes in British Columbia. And they really started similar to the Rochdale co-op movement. A group of people wanted safe, affordable housing. They assembled, they developed, and they moved into that co-op housing.
I had no idea that you said there's close to 15,000 people that live in co-ops today.
15,000 homes, about 271 actual buildings. But the majority of co-ops, there are equity co-ops, but they're a much smaller number. The majority of co-ops in BC are not-for-profit co-ops. So that really means that whatever it costs to operate the building, including taking care of the building and also any sort of maintenance or reserves, that amount is the amount that the co-ops work from. And then they decide the housing charges based on what the members have decided, how many low-income households they can afford within their budget. And people from housing co-ops are ranging from low to what we call median income ranges. And it really was a kind of community-based housing that's addressing social inequities, whereas public housing developments, say, have a stigma of that low-income ghettos. Housing co-ops in BC are not like that. People have a range of incomes and a diverse backgrounds. So it really makes really inclusive communities.
Great. I was reading a bit about your work on the Canadian Housing Federation of Canada website, and I was just fascinated about your experience, and particularly you talking about your grandma that belonged to a SUSU. And that reminded me a lot of the work of Dr. Caroline Shanice Hussain. And she did a film called The Banker Ladies that talks about different ways of creating circular solidarity economies. And her work also points to sometimes missed opportunities for the co-op sector to learn from very long-standing cooperative traditions in, for example, much of Africa, India, and the Caribbean. How could the co-op sector in Canada learn from this expertise that many people bring to Canada?
Well, I just want to touch a bit on that video because it really was an aha moment for me where a light bulb went off that I'd been working in the sector for 14 plus years, and the connection of my grandmother and how she gathered with her friends and collected money and she was able to purchase larger items for her at a certain time really was based on the cooperative model. It wasn't just about people getting together, but there was an economic member participation component of that. So it really struck me that the co-op model has lasted a very long time, that the stories that we're telling today, I think we're doing a much better job in the recent couple of years, that it's not just a Eurocentric model, that cooperation didn't just start in the UK, that it has existed in a number of different cultures. And the fact that we are really focused on racial equity and marginalized communities, the fact that it's already been successful, I think we can learn from that and really highlight that that's happened and that's continuing to happen and that this is a better alternative model.
Thank you. Yeah, Banker Ladies was an aha moment for me as well. I grew up in a co-op and in the co-op movement, but I didn't learn about many of the types of organizations that Caroline was talking about before watching her film.
Yeah, it was really great.
Can you talk a bit about the ways co-ops are working towards implementation of the truth and reconciliation recommendations and thinking about decolonizing?
Well, I've had a front seat in watching the change in my colleagues and housing co-op members themselves in the last, I would say, 18 months to a couple years. And recognizing, even myself as a person of color coming from the Caribbean, that my path here, my being here, my access to education, my access to housing was really built on a colonial and really capitalistic construct, and that I have privilege. And for housing co-ops, I've observed that they're reflecting on their communities and their homes. And we're proud of housing co-ops, but we also have to recognize and acknowledge that the land that they're built on, it was unceded, and the impact it's had on that community. Housing is one area where Indigenous people and their communities are facing significant disparities. And here we are living in housing cooperatives, and we are really quite privileged to do so. In fact, some data, Indigenous people are overrepresented in the homeless population, and some stats from the Canadian Housing and Renewal Association 2018 that Indigenous people that do have housing, 23% of them are living in unsuitable housing, and 20% of them are living in housing that's in need of repair. I don't know if you saw the TED Talk from Nikki Sanchez, but she's an Indigenous environmental educator, and she talks about decolonization. And I'm paraphrasing here, but she says, history is not our fault, but where we find ourselves is our responsibility. And that's what I've observed our members of our housing co-ops are doing right now. They're reflecting on racism. They're reflecting on their social identity that they've inherited. And given the democratic nature of cooperatives, it starts with the personal journey. And you take that experience with you as you sit on the board of directors, as you sit on the board of directors of your co-op, as you're a member of a co-op, and it ripples into the way that you lead and that you are a community member. And I've really observed that and really proud of the work and the leadership that's coming from that direction. Our members have mandated, you know, co-ops have resolutions, and it's more than just passing a resolution, but it really is an indicator, and it really puts resources and financial resources to action. They have mandated that as a federation, we lead them in refreshing our education program, really focusing on providing that education. I mean, it's truth and reconciliation, but first we have to learn the truth, and we're still learning the truth. It's coming with some discomfort, I think, for everybody, but our members are really committed to learning that truth. We're engaging in refreshing our education program, changing the way that we meet with our co-op members so that we can use technology and create sort of like the World Cafe model so that they can rethink their communities and look at areas where there may be room for dismantling these systems that are excluding certain groups of people. So we have to engage all members. And also, I can't ignore the work of CHF Canada. They've created a reconciliation toolkit. And if you haven't had a chance to look at it, I suggest that you download it. It's on their website. It really sharing stories of what other co-ops are doing, some ideas for action and some tools to help co-ops organize and create resources. And, you know, reconciliation is about relationship building. So in order to do that, we need to include Indigenous communities. And decolonization is the work that we have to do together. Can't erase what's happened, but we can definitely remove the inherent inequity in our society. And that's what housing co-op members are really leading the charge in that particular area. And I'm very proud of the work that we're doing so far. Still a long way to go, but we're definitely moving in the right direction.
For sure. Can you talk a bit about how you've recreated or what you felt you had to recreate in your resources?
Well, for starters, when we took a look at the people that were delivering our workshops, it wasn't as diverse as we would like it. We looked at our diversity around the board level as well. And I know that there's work that the board wants to do in that particular area. With respect to our education program, we are in the process of doing that, but we also brought in knowledge. The fact is that within ourselves, we didn't have that knowledge. before, we had a typical education program of what makes a good board, how to create model rules for your housing cooperative, how to deal with member terminations. We are now focusing on how to understand Indigenous cultures, what you can learn from those cultures, and environmental sustainability, and learning from different cultures on how they are impacting their everyday operations. So that is really quite a change in our education program. And we're just now opening that doorway, which is turning out to be a really, really great experience for our members and also for our staff. They're very excited about this direction.
That's great. One of the questions I had for you was, for people setting up a co-op, let's say a group wants to set up a co-op on campus, what would be your advice to them in terms of thinking through truth and reconciliation and thinking through how to develop processes and governance that is grounded in decolonial thought?
I do recommend taking a look at that CHF Canada a Reconciliation Toolkit. I think that's a great resource, and I think that's a good starting point. I know that as cooperators, we love to cooperate. So exercises like this, where we set aside time to speak to other people that are doing different things in this area, or looking at some other success stories and finding out about that. I know as cooperators, the people have always made time, whether it's an hour or 45 minutes. And I think that's the best way of learning. And I would say just really taking a close look at your systems and what you're doing. In one exercise with the housing co-op, it was a simple, not that this is a simple matter, but taking a look at when they held their board meetings. If they're holding their board meetings on a Sunday or a Saturday when a member would have a time for worship, then they're unknowingly excluding that group. We meet on Sundays at whatever, and that person goes to church. They're not going to apply to be a member of the board because they're like, well, I can't make the board meetings. But if you present the information as the CHFBC board does, where we don't set the board calendar, board meetings dates until the first board meeting of the new board and say, okay, which dates work for you? I know it's very simplistic, but it is something that you should look at when you're setting something up, that you're not coming from a point of view of authority and this is the way it's going to be. There's a different way to get to what you want. I think that's something we could all do more of.
Yeah, those things that seem so small but are
the
deal breakers in terms of participation. So another question I had for you was around issues of access and inclusion. What work do you see happening in this area?
For the housing co-op, first of all, I would say let's just talk with people with developmental disabilities, is that segment of the population has pretty much been excluded from living in housing cooperatives simply because of a lack of knowledge. People are just unaware of their ability to be involved in the democratic functioning or the social part. I don't mean just entertainment. I mean the society, the community inclusion. And we have been doing some work with Community Living Society. And we are, at least with the new co-ops that are coming up, we should have over 2,000 new housing co-ops by 2027. We have set aside homes, one-bedroom homes, for these individuals that are, all they need is one bedroom, they're paying a shelter rate, and making sure that they're part of those communities. Because housing cooperatives are naturally set up where individuals with a different ability can, the experience being positive for the person with the disability and the fully abled person, because they're learning from each other, they're supporting each other. And we've seen it happen in some housing co-ops where they get groceries together. You know, I'm going to go get groceries. Do you want to come along? And what that has meant is that the support that's needed from government to have support workers for that individual has the potential to be lowered, because if they needed a ride to work, if they had established a relationship within the co-op, they could probably get a ride from their neighbor, or they could have assistance in grocery shopping and that kind of thing. So that's working really well. We want to do some more of it. But, you know, it comes down to the fact that there's just not enough housing co-ops sometimes. And the affordability factor does come into play. But that's what's happening right now. We want to see more of that. And with physical access, it's a great relationship that we have with the Disability Alliance and the Right Fit. And they are maintaining a waiting list of individuals that want to get into a housing cooperative that need wheelchair accessible homes. And the co-op before would not know how to get a hold of these people. They wouldn't know not in a timely manner. It may take a lot longer. And now they're dealing with a vacancy loss. So we have established this connection, which is working really well. They've placed over 57 individuals and they've matched them with homes that are wheelchair accessible. Because when you lose that opportunity, that home doesn't come up for a very long time. There's not a lot of turnover. So it's really important, this relationship that we're having, and it's working really well. We want to see some more of it.
Can you talk a bit more about what a land trust model is?
So the land trust model actually came from in the States quite a few years ago when a group of people got together and bought the land. And CHFBC is the owner of a community land trust, and it is a not-for-profit, and it really protects that the steward of the land in this case, so that it can never be used for anything other than affordable home ownership. And since there is a shortage of land, if you were to start up a new campus cooperative, a land trust model could be one option, because depending on who you're getting the land from or the building from, there's not a lot of empty buildings out there, but they are seeking that assurance that their contribution is going to be protected for perpetuity, and it will only ever be used for this purpose.
Right. And so cooperative associations actually buy land.
Yes, some of our co-ops are, they'll have a mortgage. They may have a lease. Some co-ops are on land leased from the city. Some co-ops have their own land. We call that freehold as well. So there's a number of models that work. I think the outcome is that you want to make sure that you are protecting the asset, that it'll only be used for the purpose that it was meant to be used. And you're not inadvertently setting something up that it could be, you know, taken, purchased or assumed for another reason with capitalistic tendencies, of course.
Right. A very good point. What would you say are the opportunities and pressing challenges for housing co-ops in BC?
We have an affordability houses crisis, and more co-op homes means that it's one of the options that's available. The model can move somebody from one end of the housing spectrum to the other, right? You can move from that shelter homelessness spectrum and go all the way to possibility a limited equity home ownership model. I think that's really important piece, because as part of a cooperative, as part of a cooperator, you have a say in the running of your building. You're having an education, that's that independence that you're learning along the way, as compared to just being a recipient of housing at a discounted rate. You are learning about your building, you're learning about community building, you're learning about all kinds of things. So it's an education along the way. When I hire people to work for CHFBC, I find people underestimate the volunteer work, the volunteer component that they're doing. And you talked about that circular economy. Like, how do you put a value to that unpaid labor that is part of our society? And that's really what cooperatives are bringing to the table as housing cooperatives. Of course, they're hiring professional management companies to take care of the buildings, you know, but when it comes to making these important decisions for their communities and project management to retrofit, you know, those kinds of things, that's something you put on a resume. And so people that are coming into living in housing cooperatives are better at the end of that experience. And they're going to transfer that into their lives, their work lives, their personal lives. And I think as a society generally, we can just be uplifted, and it's a great experience. So I think those are the great opportunities. So we just have to have more and tell more of that story.
That's great. What would your advice be to people who are brand new to co-ops, but they're excited and they want to start up co-ops on campuses?
I would say that there's no limit to what type of cooperative you can create. I've heard of washing machine cooperatives. That's my newest one. And wow. I thought, wow, I guess you don't need your washing machine 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. Why not share it? So there is no limit. And that's exactly what makes cooperatives a great model, because of the innovation. I think what really gets me excited about it is hearing about the different types of cooperatives. Every time I attend an event, it's about hearing everything that's going on, but it's about hearing this different type of cooperative. And you're like, oh, that's a great idea. So the newest cooperative for the BC Cooperative Association is a counseling cooperative. And I was like, why not? Childcare cooperative, okay. A pub, yes, we can do that too. So I just think there's no limit. You get together, you fill a need, and you create a model that works for everybody and meets the needs of your members. That's what cooperation is about.
Well, Michelle, thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy schedule to talk with me. You've just given me so much to think about. And also, I need to go find more information out about this washing machine co-op.
So, of course.
Thanks so much.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you for joining us today. You can find links to the materials discussed, as well as more information about this podcast series at michellestack.com. I welcome your suggestions for future guests and themes. Feel free to contact me at michelle.stack@ubc.ca or on Twitter @michellestack. Have a great day.